Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Tom Dahmer, our guest every Thursday, is back to discuss the seriousness of mass incarceration, the barriers to success once released from prison, and Tom will discuss the proud and boastful individuals placed in position to control the currently and formerly incarcerated individuals, rather than encourage and ensure their well-being and productivity once returning to society. It is also always the so-called righteous in high positions that seem to cause more barriers to productivity than those they are supposed to monitor. We're going to hear Tom talk about his dream as a child to become a professional soccer player. And unfortunately, incarceration prevented that from happening. Tom, a first-time offender, went into prison at the age of 19 years old. And 4 years later, he came out. But in the meantime, he had lost his dream. So we're going to welcome Tom on the show this morning so that he can share his experiences, both good and bad, of both worlds, behind the prison walls and in the communities. He uses his experience to now be a voice for the incarcerated population around the country. So let's welcome Tom Dahmer. Tom, are you on with us?
Hi, Leona. I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, good. So we also, I have invited, and she is not on with us yet, but we have a new director of media affairs, and she is anxious to hear you and also to meet with you, either through Zoom or whatever. But she will be joining us as well this morning.
Okay.
So what do you have for us today? I mean, I was just mentioning to the audience about the experiences that you've had and the dream that you once had to be a soccer player. And you can expand on that a little bit as well as what you've been up to since then.
Okay. Well, right now I visited my nephew. I flew into town and I visited my nephew, so I surprised them. And it's nice always being back and being able to reflect whenever you come home. And it always gets me back motivated when I go out to L.A. And I just get so much refocused whenever I go out to L.A. because, you know, I don't live in fear in L.A. like I kind of do back where I was raised. But just a little bit about my background is, like Leona said, when I was younger, I had aspirations to play soccer. I felt like I did everything I felt like I did most of the decisions as a kid, you know, correct. I got good grades. I stayed out of trouble for the most part as far as, like, breaking the law and things like that. And just my ultimate goal in life was to play soccer. I didn't know if I was going to do that for my whole life or whatnot, but I just wanted to play college soccer. I wanted to see how far and what level of soccer I could get to. And in the time, I just had a lot of things happen in my life, which, you know, you look at now and you're like, damn, I wish I had these problems instead of the problems that I ended up really having due to, you know, just making poor decisions and doing armed robbery with a fake gun and a couple of my friends at the time. It was, you know, it just changed my life. My life was just kind of going, and then all of a sudden I basically had a fight for my life. And, you know, people don't realize that I was, you know, I ended up facing 130 years. I was never in prison. It was a new thing for me and, you know, the other two people that were in trouble with me. You know, one was Hispanic, one was black, and then I was white. So, and, you know, I bailed out first, and it was just a very unique situation. I feel like my situation since the beginning has been pretty unique, and I just had to fight for my life. You know, the DA and the state at the time wanted to give me a lot of years in prison. I never knew anybody in prison. My family was never in prison. So when I bailed out, it was just like a complete mind game. There was no resources out for me. Like, there's nobody to talk to. There's nobody going through the same thing. There's nobody to prepare me for prison. And then, you know, you actually go to prison and you experience it, and you really can't, you don't think it's like that until you go. And then you realize, like, okay, I realize why the recidivism rate is so high. I realize you know, why this is so negative in here, and there's just not much opportunity. So I'm willing to talk about everything today, you know, now with the COVID-19 and just like the movement, the racial injustice movement. I feel like this is the first time, I mean, I know I'm so-called young, but I feel like this is the first time really that like the prison systems and the injustice there are at least like catching wind, like it, right now, at least they're being talked about somewhat at a more regular conversation than before, you know, because they just realize that they need to be changed. Since they've been around, since prisons have been around, like, and the recidivism rate has been a stat, and they started, like, really looking at people getting out of prison in the 80s and 90s and 2000s, and within the last, like, 30 years, they've just, they've realized that prison is so detrimental, and that's kind of what where I come into play, even though I want to make it, and even though I believe I'm going to make it and pay paths for people, I also believe that there's a reason why not many people make it. You know, I think prison is a death sentence. Instead of like, you know, hey, somebody, you know, a 17, 18-year-old kid, just give them a couple of years, they'll learn their lesson. I just think that's a wrong mentality, and it's not saying that I think everybody should not go to prison and get away with making a poor choice, but there should be something in between. I don't know what there should be 100%. We've talked about it a few times on the show. I can't black and white give it to you, but I can give you ideas. I can give you gist. I can give you things that will benefit people that are facing years in prison, thinking that sending a teenage kid or sending a kid in his early 20s like to prison for a few years and then just releasing them and saying, oh, they'll be fine, or oh, they'll learn their lesson, I think really you just like kind of destroy that person. And it's very hard for a young man or a young woman, especially of color, especially of going to a negative neighborhood in poverty or low-class neighborhood, as far as income-wise, with a record. I just don't think that's hitting the ground running in life. I feel like somebody like that in life compared to somebody their age that is a different skin color without a record are so far apart in life. The opportunities that they're going to end up getting or the opportunities that they worked for that they never get, I feel like that plays a huge factor in life, and it's a detrimental toll to ask somebody to come out of prison with years of prison underneath their belt, still at a relatively young age, and then just ask them to turn it around.
You know, yesterday, and this is why I'm bringing this up, because what you're talking about is actually with the young people is necessary to. Yesterday, I interviewed Janet Lee, who is she and Aaron Nichols are putting on the National Day of Freedom and Justice across the country. And it was very interesting because I also ended up having on the show with us was Shahid Omar, who is the founder of All Inmate Lives Matter, Inc. out of Virginia. And then we had, which I had interviewed him about a week or so before, we had his name is Chanupa Guhamani, and he is with the Sioux tribe out of South Dakota. And they all seemed, and it wasn't meant to, I mean, it wasn't scheduled like that, but it just turned out that all three groups were on the show, and they're all going to be connecting with one another for this national event, which is the Freedom for Justice National Day of Freedom and Justice. And also, one of them was planning on putting on a demonstration. So they're going to be coming together, all of them, in this day that they're planning on having on August 22nd, where they will be going to the White House. And those from other countries that are also going to be participating are going to be participating through the Zoom. And it's all going to be virtual from that end. So you're talking about the young people, and this is an issue that should be addressed as well, whether you address it through the Zoom meeting on that day during this demonstration, or if you were to even join with them to go to Washington. But these are some of the issues that need to be talked about. And you mentioned alternatives to incarceration, and I still say, I always say, defund the prisons, defund the Department of Corrections, defund law enforcement, put the money into long-term residential treatment programs. they have the Department of Youth Services, where sometimes years ago, I don't know what it's like now, but the Department of Youth Services would have these young people in there, and they were also being abused. There was a lot of things going on with them, just as in with the prisons. The prisoners are being abused, deprived, especially now with the pandemic. But if they come up with long-term residential treatment programs, it's like a prison, really. It doesn't have to be out in 6 months or a year or 2 years. But at the same time, the difference being they have qualified people to work with these individuals. And they can put in the doctors, the medical, psychological. They can put in the substance abuse counselors, social workers. They can put in all these occupational and physical therapists. They can help these people, whether they're youth or older people. They can help them to make to put their resumes together, to teach them how to present themselves when they go for jobs, to teach them, to help them with their whatever their psychological issue is, whatever their trauma was, whatever they're going through. You know, these are things that would be so much better for these people, these individuals, whether they're young, old, middle-aged, or whatever. This is a lot better than putting them in a prison system that's steel bars and cement walls and abusive guards and officials. This is not helping anyone. And, Tom, you know of all people, and that's why I'm glad that you're talking about some of these things.
Yeah, just I agree, and that sounds so, you know, motivating and such progress. You're talking about all the groups getting together and going, and me definitely playing my part. You know, I'll talk to you more about that and about playing my part and how to do that, because I think it's a necessity. I think it's a very necessity. I think it's a part that people have to play in the world. It's unfortunate that 17, 18-year-old kids, 19-year-old kids, 20-year-old kids make mistakes. That's just the way life goes. Some make more harsher mistakes than others. But at those age groups, coming from mostly, you know, just negative backgrounds or backgrounds where these kids aren't capable of handling themselves as adults yet, I didn't write the rules, but by now in 2020, there's got to be an alternative. You know, prison is such an extreme measure where it shouldn't be like, oh, prison or freedom. Like, that's a pretty big difference, you know, that there's nothing in between. That's drastic in somebody's life, like either living out, you know, in the community or being in prison and then coming out back into that community with so many stipulations and a ball and chain and that record. You know, in some states, they don't even ask you if you've been in the prison because they can just Google you. You know, they have a website where they just, you know, type in your name and they already know. So it's just, I feel like it's just a daunting task. And even though I'm a very blessed human being, even though I believe prison is going to make me succeed and, you know, get me to where I want to in life, just as far as everything it taught me, I was just lucky. I'm going to be honest. I was one of the lucky ones. Most people, you know, prison is so daunting of a task, and it's such a dark place without any resources. It just plays such a pivotal role in somebody's life maturing. You can't ask somebody if they didn't mature on the streets that did something really negative. You can't ask them to then go into prison and mature and come out with their head on the right place to succeed in the real world, because prison isn't the real world. There's so many norms and there's so many things you do in prison where you wouldn't do in the real world. When you're a young age and when you're maturing process and when you're going through all that, if you're maturing and you're learning just everything about prison ways, I just, like I said, I think it's a daunting task. And I was locked up with many, many individuals where I just seen so much potential. It was shocking. I seen people that robbed banks, you know, with guns, and I seen other armed robbers that were, you know, just my age, and just getting so many more years. And, you know, it just blew my mind because, you know, sitting down with this person, you know, giving them a role model, a male role model, and giving them resources and giving them workout regimens and, you know, giving them a structure in life and, you know, getting their mind right. Like, hey, you got to wake up. You know, you're 18 years old and you're in prison. Clearly you don't know how to be successful yet. So, you know, like it's a very humbling feeling, because no matter what, you know, once you go to prison, there's no more, you know, what you're doing, and you're 100% right. At that time, you have to be a realist, and you have to humble yourself and realize, okay, maybe my way isn't the right way, because this is where it landed me. It landed me in hell on earth. So I just think that by now, with so much government funding for so many things in the world and so much money spent on these things, I do believe that the United States does have money and it does have resources. If it really wanted to, you know, put some money and resources into these populations, I just don't know if they're ready or they want to see these populations succeed, because I feel like they will. I really feel like, excuse me, somebody from, you know, a negative background or somebody that served prison. I was just talking about that with one of my best friends, that like the best job I've ever had was the job I had in prison, and it was in the work release minimum, and I was paid the less. Like, I was basically a slave in the United States, but at the same time, I got a job. So like, people look at it two different ways. Some people look at it like, I should be so grateful to have that job just because I am in prison, and that I don't deserve much better. I don't deserve to be treated the same. I'm lucky enough to get the job and whatever entitles. And then there's some people that's like, you know, he deserves that job, even though he is in prison, even though he didn't make a mistake. He deserves that job, but he deserves a fair wage. He deserves to be treated equally. So there's two different sides of it. But in prison, I felt like I was happier going to that job just because it was a job. It was an opportunity. And like, so many other men I met were in the same mind frame. Like, grown men, all they did is need an opportunity. Like, wow, they finally had a job. Everybody did their job right. People didn't break the rules. The little rules they broke, they were minimum. And it was just like, people need that when they get out. You know, I don't know how to explain it, but it's in. But, like, people need to get that opportunity when they get out, where they get out of prison and they have that, wow, like, I finally have an opportunity. Like, you know, they get out, they have everything lined up, and, you know, people would talk about it the whole time. Everybody does in prison. Even if you don't have anything, they still talk about getting out and being free. But when you get closer to your release date, a lot of guys get scared, where they did in the beginning. Where in the beginning they talk about just getting out and, you know, not having no worries, and they're going to do this and they're going to do that. But then all of a sudden, when it's a month or two and they're putting in their release date and they're trying to get out, you know, they get scared because they know, like, you know what, I'm not pro in the house. So, you know what, I don't have a job the day I walk out. And I just think if a couple of those things, and I don't think that's that much to ask. I feel like most of this, you know, they all work together. You know, like, if you employ felons, you get tax write-offs, you pay felons, you know, a little bit less wage for something that, you know, you would pay other people a higher wage, but it's still a good enough wage where if they walk out and they work 40 hours a week, they can sustain that living with the income, the house, and everything. And I think they all kind of work together. I feel like releasing people from prison don't want to be like, oh, I need a handout, I need extra, I just, you know, I can do it, just like they can do it. But it sucks to admit, but you can't. Most people can't. They just can't. Most people can't come out of prison with no resources and no opportunity and become successful in the world. Like, it's so hard where people don't realize, like, how daunting of a task that is, of coming out of prison with a record, with a mentality, with everything you've seen, that you've been scarred, and PTSD, and just resources, and just like not learning and maturing with the world. You might have matured mentally in prison, but you didn't mature with the world. You're not up to date with the world. You don't know how the norms of the world. And I just think, to somebody getting out of prison, what are their best options in that shoe? You know, maybe they end up getting a good job, maybe they don't, maybe with a good job they get a home, but there's a lot of maybes. And in some cities where the opportunities are smaller, where they're not like LA, where like you have 2 million jobs to choose from. You know, some cities are smaller cities. People getting out of prison in Illinois, in Milwaukee, in the Midwest, you know, they go to cities where, you know, 50, 60,000 people are in their cities, which is a lot, but it's not. You know, the jobs are scarce. Everywhere you go for a job, you have to compete with the next person that has a degree for it, or you know, has some college credits, that's never been into trouble, that has a better job resume, a job history resume. So, you know, all these jobs are serious. You're not walking out getting a fairly paid job. So there's got to be something in between where the programs of housing and work and school are all, you know, twined together and work together, because in California, I feel like that's what California is trying to do. You know, they're still a long way from that, but they at least have their school. But I feel like, you know, if somebody walks out of prison and it's not like, oh, here, we're giving this to you, this to you, this to you, but the day they walk out of prison, they've already talked to schooling, they've already talked to the houses, they already talked to the job, they have pretty much a plan set up. This might not be a 5-year plan. What are you doing in 5 years? I'm going to be working at this factory and still going to school. Like, who cares about that? But this might be a 6-month plan. You're walking out of prison, every single individual would walk out with more confidence, with feeling more self-worth, with feeling with more value that they can bring to the world if they did walk out at a job that taught them a skill, that they knew, okay, I have this job, they're willing to work with me, I have good people put in this place at this job, good, healthy environment. I also have school I go to and, you know, the little housing or whatever section as well, you know, can be paid with this job and going to school. So I just feel like it would make people a lot more dedicated, motivated. People wouldn't want to go out to the bars. They wouldn't want to mess with people that weren't there. They would kind of just be focused on school, work, and job. And then over time, they'll break into society. But it takes time. It takes time to feel comfortable around a bunch of people. It takes time to say jokes, because everything is prison related. And no matter what, prison talk and lingo and lifestyle is just a little different. And it's hard to expect somebody that had so much value in prison, like I'm talking about the people that had a higher reputation or everybody knew in the prison, it's hard to take those people and just put them in a room, because they're talking a different language early on. They don't know what to say. You know, what might be funny to them isn't funny to another person. So I feel like just providing work and opportunity would be so much better. We would see the recidivism rate change. But for a while, and when I got out of prison, I just always asked myself, like, I knew people wanted me to succeed, but I really had to ask myself when I got out of prison, like, does the system want me to succeed? Because how they're talking to me, how they're setting up my rules, how they're setting up how to get jobs, like, I really questioned, like, man, you know, what's the highest ceiling I can reach here? Like, probably working at a car wash, living at home, or living in a situation which isn't that healthy. And it's like, you know, I want more in life. I do deserve a good job, just as much as somebody that's in my grade class that hasn't went to prison. I deserve the same job as long as I put in the work and I'm qualified for it too. So I think something over time needs to happen where they do need somebody in charge of running that, where, you know, they provide therapists, they provide just a team, just an overall team. They got tutors, they got some teachers, they got a contract with a college where when they come through the program, they know, like, okay, they're coming through, you know, the reentry program, or they're coming through, you know, being previously incarcerated. It's a different population. And, you know, I believe you just need to offer more. It's just facts. I don't think that, you know, a 28-year-old man after serving 5-6 years of prison sitting in a college room for the first time is really comparable to a 19-year-old kid that 3 months ago just graduated high school living in his parents', you know, house that for money. I mean, I think by now we have to realize, like, okay, you know, the outcome of getting an A is probably different. Probably different for those two individuals. And if you took, you know, 100 of those individuals and 100 of regular college kids and put them in a university, I think the outcomes are going to be different. You know, I think one's going to succeed a lot more than the other. But then when you provide the things that are, you know, a necessity to succeed, you know, a little bit of extra help, you know, it may be a team around them to, you know, just in case they fall off the wagon, or a team to motivate them, a team to show them like it's possible, a team that's been through their shoes, that maybe was incarcerated before and now have college degrees and can talk firsthand about, hey, this is what I did in school, this is what I did in life to get me here. And then also with the job, we just need something like that. And forever, I always think about that. I always think about, like, it can't be just prison or home, because nobody wins in that situation. Whenever you have victims in your case, they can't release you home, because home looks like no punishment. even though it is, you know, it's, people get state sentences, people get a lot of probation time, and it's not easy living on probation. It's not easy living on parole and things like that. So to say like getting no time is no punishment is not true. But in society's eyes, if somebody's facing prison and they do have victims or they do you know, make choices where most normal people don't think about doing an armed robbery or think about shooting somebody or think about having a gun on them or thinking about doing something like this, getting in a fight and hitting somebody with a baseball bat and hurting them. Like, most people don't think that they would ever be in situations like that until they are or until one of their loved ones are. And then they look at the whole situation different. But before that, they think of punishment or no punishment. So they go to prison and get punishment, whether they're not.
With what you're mentioning, punishment, people in society have that mentality. They want the worst punishment for these prisoners. Many are for the death penalty. Many are for life without parole. But there's a situation, and I came across this, and I wanted to read this real quick, because it shows that everyone in society that is for harsh sentencing and for the death penalty are all criminals. They have just not served time in prison. But there was a wave of action. One of the saddest chapters in history, and I shared this with everyone on Facebook, George Stinney Jr., the youngest person to be sentenced to death in the United States, he was 14 years old when he was executed in an electric chair. During his trial, he always carried a Bible in his hand, claiming his innocence. He was accused of killing two white girls, 11-year-old Betty and Mary of 7, whose bodies were found near the house the boy and his parents lived. At the time, all members of the jury were white. The trial lasted 2 hours only, and the sentence was dictated 10 minutes later. The boy's parents were not even allowed in the courtroom and subsequently expelled from that city after the trial. Before the execution, George spent 81 days in prison without being able to see his parents. He was held in solitary confinement. Note, with nobody to talk to. He was electrocuted with 5,380 volts in his head. 70 years later, in 2014, his innocence was finally proven by a judge in South Carolina. This child was executed for a crime he did not even commit. And people in society today that have the nerve to say if someone does the crime, they deserve the time. These people do not even realize they should be the ones that are in prison because they chose to vote for that death penalty. And to this day, people are always thinking they are so righteous that those who do the crime deserve to do the time. They don't realize, they don't even know anything about these people. They didn't know anything about you. They don't know anything about a lot of people. And yet they're going to end up judging someone and hoping and praying that that person gets the maximum punishment for what he did or she did.
Yeah,
I also wanted to mention, as far as jobs, I don't know if you've heard of Prison Fellowship, but Prison Fellowship is one of the nation's largest Christian nonprofits serving prisoners, former prisoners, and their families. And they just announced a partnership with 70 million jobs for the formerly incarcerated.
Okay.
And that you can find that on the internet just by typing in Prison Fellowship 70 million jobs, and it'll come up.
Speaking of prison, know about the case of the 14-year-old kid that was found innocent that was executed, and you know we have to think, like, I understand it's a hard concept to think most people or a lot of people go to prison and don't deserve it. You know, it's a hard thing to try to sell to people, but we really do as a society have to think about in the 80s and 90s when DNA was coming up and when, you know, they didn't have, you know, sometimes no forensics evidence and just somebody's word and, you know, all white versus one black person, all white jury, all white DA, all white court system. How many people thrown in cages? You know, we're talking about now that, you know, because social media is so big nowadays, people are tired of the injustice. Like, no matter what, the right person with a good heart, it's sickening going on your phone. Everybody goes on their phone. It's like another world when you go on your phone. And when you're going on all these social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, you don't really think, but people are tired of going on those and just seeing black men get killed. Like, it's at the point where now we've seen, like, a social injustice stand from all the races, really, where they're like, listen, maybe we weren't so open to hearing it before, but at this point, it was a point where I believe with the three people that died, like once every 4 or 5 days, we turn on social media and there's just videos everywhere, millions and millions of views, millions of shares, where just 40, 50, 100 million people were seeing this video over and over. And everybody knew, like, you know, right or wrong. You know, everybody's got those senses inside of them. Like, you know, judgment calls, you know, is something right or something wrong. And most people in the world just had seen that, just seen wrong. Like, whatever that situation is, it's a wrong situation. It should not happen. And then we see it again, and we see it again, and we see it again. And it's just, it's nice, but it's not, because we don't get to see that in prison. You know, the world, I think the world would be erupting right now the same way if we showed a bunch of people getting thrown in a cage that don't deserve it for something they didn't do because of the color of their skin. Like, we have to be a realist and realize how many people, how many black men are in prison that just should not be there. It's simple as that. Just shouldn't be there. Whatever they did, whatever they said they did, whatever they have on paperwork, they shouldn't be in prison. And they are. There's a lot of people, you know, I met in Wisconsin, there's a lot of natives, and natives are mistreated in the world. You know, they're mistreated in the world as well. And I've just met so many people where I believe race in the 80s or 90s, even early 2000s, played such a role in somebody's life. So,
and this is why this interview I did yesterday, it was out of the clear blue sky, because I was to interview Janet Lee and Aaron Nichols from the National Day of Freedom and Justice, and it turns out that Shahid Omar, who founded All Inmate Lives Matter, from Virginia, he is an African American, and then Chinupa, he is a Sioux Native Indian from South Dakota, and they just came on. They were listening. Shahid had contacted me earlier, had talked about the organization he has, and these are all different races. And this is what was so important, because Shahid Omar did not mention a specific inmate. He mentioned All Lives Matter. That's his organization, All Inmate Lives Matter. In Chinupa, he's been trying to bring all people of color together for the injustices going on. And Janet Lee and Aaron Nichols putting on this National Day of Freedom and Justice not only got the attention of a lot of advocates, a lot of people in the United States, but also people from other countries are all involved now, all wanting to be a part of this National Day on August 22nd. This is what needs to take place. The people are the government, and the people are finally starting to take over their roles as the government, because the government itself is not doing anything but causing division. So hopefully through all this, we're going to see some positive changes. And you mentioned, and it's true, there's a lot of blacks, of people of color that have been so abused, so tormented and tortured in prison and out of prison. But at the same time, there are also other colors, other races as well. So I'd like to have you talk a little bit more, because I'm going to have to take this call.
Yeah, that's fine.
Thank you.
No problem. I'll just get back to the injustices that I've seen in prison as far as, like, just the racial injustices. I was always the only white person around my group. So I've seen that I did have a certain privilege even in prison that most people didn't have. I had resources, and it's just shameful that most people that go to prison, they don't have resources. It's a it's a daunting task to ask somebody to survive when they don't have a support system, they don't have money, they don't have any type of lifeline that's really there. And sometimes it's not always the case that people don't want to be there for you. It's just hard. Prison is very expensive. That's another thing, a topic that I've always wanted to talk about, is how actually expensive prison is for somebody that is supporting somebody in prison just by themselves. It's expensive to make sure that they have all the food they need to get by on a daily basis. It's expensive to make sure that they always have money on the phone and visits. Most of the time, prisons are in the country, you know, built away from people, built away from the population. So it's just a very hard task to have somebody, you know, drive 2 hours one way, 2.5 hours back the other way, vice versa. So I was just blessed that I had a lot of support system. I had my grandparents, I had my parents, I had my family always driving, you know, hours every way, a few times a week to visit me. I always had money on the phone. I always had money in my canteen so I could order food. And that played such an important role in me succeeding, where I just don't think I've ever seen anybody in prison have the level of resources that I had at that time. So I want to use that and provide more resources for people that are in there that don't have them. I think this 2 phone calls a week thing is shameful. Like two phone calls a week is nothing to a multi-million dollar phone company that they just make all their money off of prisoners. I don't think 2 phone calls a week is the right thing to do. I think it should be a lot more, because, you know, these people can't see their family, and the families can't see their people. And right now, even with the COVID, they do have Zoom meetings for visits, but, you know, normally your visits, if you get 3 visits a week, and, you know, not everybody gets always 3 visits a week every week, but sometimes some people get the maximum amount of visits in a week, and that's 8 hours from, it's, you know, 3 hours during the week, and then you get a 2-hour on the weekend visit. So that's 8 hours a week you're able to spend with loved ones that spend their time and money to come see you. Well, you can't see your loved ones anymore. So the only time you can see the people you love in prison is over a Zoom meeting, and they only give you 1 a month for 20 minutes. That's it. It's the only time you can see your family right now. And I think that they just really don't care about people in prison. With this whole COVID thing and this whole pandemic, people from prison's well-being is not that high on the priority list. It just isn't. In the overall grand scheme of things in the world, like right now with, you know, 40 million people or 35 million people on unemployment and the job and, you know, the greatest recession we've ever had in the country and just so many things going on in the world to try to get the world back, I just don't think many people in power are saying right now next to each other, well, let's improve the prison system. It's high on anybody's priority list. And when it's not high on anybody's priority list, that's when basically this whole population just gets kind of thrown to the side and kind of, hey, we'll talk about it later. We'll talk about it at another time when we fix more important things. And I just don't think that should be the view people should be looking at in prison. I believe it needs to be higher as a priority, because most people don't get life in prison. Most people are coming out. Most people are coming back to the communities that sent them to prison and around the people that they were around before. So if you can't change that, and you know all these people are coming back home one day, and if they come back home and you're releasing them to an unachievable goal and basically setting them up for failure, I mean, the community suffers as well. You know, your community is going to suffer if you don't have the right things in place for people to succeed when they get out of prison. And I can talk about like a smaller community. When I got out, I was in a smaller community and I just couldn't compete with anybody. I couldn't compete with anybody with a prison record. Everybody, for every job I went to, they had a better job resume. They had, you know, without a record. And I just got overlooked in every opportunity besides the few opportunities like car washes or McDonald's or fast food or something like that. And I understand you have to start somewhere, but it's very hard going out and getting a job by yourself. And I know that sounds crazy and it sounds like really different because that's what most people do in the world. You know, they go to college and then they go get a job. They have to look for a job themselves and, you know, they have to get it. And getting a job is hard. So, you know, why can't somebody from prison? But people from prison that walk out of prison, the walls, they really aren't equipped to walk in a job interview, you know, usually so early on where they can just knock the job interview out of the park and guarantee get the job and have as much confidence as the person sitting next to them that maybe looks different, that comes from a different background, that knows somebody. So I just believe, you know, we need to help out people from prison. It's as simple as that. It's black and white to me. I don't think it's anything gray. I think that this population, this certain percentage of the people in the world that do make mistakes and poor choices, yes, a lot of them do things where it's like, damn, you shouldn't do in life. But at the same time, we do have to open up our hearts and we do have to open up our minds and our ideas to really put some resources and some ideas and some plans into this population to help them succeed. That's what they need. Most people don't
like
to just ask for help.
I agree with you, Tom. And
they need help.
If there were more people, if there were more people like yourself, and I wish, and I still say this for you, I mean, I would love to have you working in the organization because you need to have your own organization and you need to have the support of all the advocates, all the family members of the incarcerated. You need to have the funding from the government and others, the philanthropists out there. It's people like you that can make a positive difference for a lot of people coming out of prison and also those that are in the prisons. And unfortunately, like you say, because you have a four-year record, and some have been in for years and years, 30-something years, and they're still found innocent and still inside. But, again, these are some things that I would love to work with you on and have others, and I hope and pray others will get in touch with you that are listening to this interview and that have been listening to you every Thursday, because you offer so much insight into what's going on in the prison. Through your 4 years experience, through your background, everything, you have it on both sides. You know exactly what's going on. You know what's needed. You know what the resolutions are. And everything that you've been doing has been outstanding. It has. And
I appreciate it.
They have what's called UNICOR, Employing Former Offenders. And it says the chance to earn a paycheck provides. And some of these places, they advertise a lot of these job opportunities. But when you call, it's a different story sometimes. I don't know what this UNICOR is, but it's supposed to be a company. If you get a chance to go to the website, UNICOR, and it's a government employment for inmates.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's something recent that came about or what.
I think it's just going to take one state, you know. I hate to always sound like, you know, hey, there's no this, there's no that. But then, you know, I don't know everything. And I'm going to be honest, I don't have all the knowledge in the world. But there's places, like you said, there's a bunch of organizations I'm sure that I don't know about that don't get enough credit for doing the right things or for being one of the first organizations to really help people from our background. But at the same time, I think it should be a universal system. I do. I think most states should be able to have a conversation and kind of have the same place set up where it's not just, oh, we have a little organization down in this city and we have a little organization down in this city, but what about this city? What about in America? Isn't America the same thing? Shouldn't everybody get the same opportunity? So somebody in Chicago getting out of prison with no resources, with no programs, with no Job Corps, with no none of these nonprofit organizations that are spread out in other areas, why are people getting out of prison and have that opportunity, but in some places in the United States, people are getting out of prison with nothing, with zero. They don't have that. They don't have those organizations. They don't have the same opportunities. And that's where I think the United States needs to come together. And I think it's just going to take one state to implement something, like one state to implement, like, an alternative, you know, like, or either they can hit the alternative as far as not going to prison and build an alternative for some people, or they can build an alternative for maybe not changing the prison system yet, because I think that's a very, it's a very heavy and long task to do, as far as changing laws and getting you know, the Senate involved and getting lawmakers involved about how to run prisons and what qualifications people need to be in prisons and how to do certain things. I think those take time, and I think we'll reach those eventually. But I think something that could instantaneously show the world or the United States change the recidivism rate is like an alternative program of getting out of prison. You know, I would love to get one before you go to prison, clearly. But right now, at least me, just a realist in me, I don't think that that's the first thing that's going to change. I think in order to change that, we would need to show, you know, show some work that what we're talking about works. You know, and everybody, you know, like when you're able to prove and have statistics, it just speaks a greater volume. Like right now, instead of having these conversations where we're brewing ideas and we're coming up with solutions and we're working together as a team, what if we already had something in place? What if we already had our nonprofit organization in that was supplying, you know, in the city, you know, 600 jobs to people all in the same area? We're supplying school, we're supplying this. And over 2 years, we could say, we could talk differently, like, well, hey, you know, these, how many people have a job? And since they've been in our program, they have not gone back to prison. And out of the 600 people, the recidivism rate so far in 2-3 years is 6% chance. Like 6% of people come out that come to our program, end up going back to prison, where maybe 6% people make it in total, just coming out with nothing. You know, where you can show them, like, this population coming out, a large population, is continuing to work. They're getting degrees at a success rate where we haven't seen this before. Like, you know, I don't think there's much statistics on in the state of Wisconsin or the state of Minnesota of, like, really how many people with years of prison experience come out and get bachelor's degrees. Like, you know, what's the statistics of that? Like, you know, I can guarantee you, without sitting here spending a lot of time, I can guarantee you it's in the single digit statistic. I can guarantee you that. And that's not the case for somebody going to high school. What is the statistic of somebody going to high school that wants to go to college? It's not in a single statistic, I can guarantee. I guarantee you it's in two-digit statistic, and it's a higher two-digit statistic. Do you see the disparity of just somebody that is going to high school that wants to go to college to somebody that messed up or made one or two wrong choices in their life, served a few years, and came out and is still in the same age group or very close that want to go to college? That's all they want to do. The same thing as most people in America. But the percentages of succeeding or doing that are so different. They're not even comparable. They're so different and they're so far off where it makes people wonder nowadays, like, why is it? Not everybody that comes out of prison that wants to go to college is dumb. Sorry to interrupt, but you can go.
No, I was just going to say, we have someone on the call with. I just wanted to say something real quick. The problem is, again, the government, because this is something I mentioned yesterday on the interview, is this country is so inconsistent across the board. The problems are the same in every state. The problems are the same in everyone's lives. But yet, every single state operates their prisons differently. They have different rules and regulations, policies. Until they can get their minds together and get some stability and consistency across the board, there's going to be problems in this country. This is not the United States of Africa. I mean, the United States of Africa even has more consistency than the United States. We need to get this country on board with every state, operate the prisons the same way, you know, have the programs the same type of programs. You know, all these things need to take place. And as far as jobs go, like you say, there's people that come out as jailhouse lawyers. They become lawyers. They can't practice in a courtroom because of their prison record. You know, these are things that need to be looked at. This country is dysfunctional, but it's not the incarcerated. It's the government, because there would be less recidivism rates. And as we've been talking about, Germany and Norway and Netherlands and Sweden and all those places, there's no such thing as mass incarcerations. There's no such thing as, we have 165,000 lifers in the United States. They have, what, 43 in the Netherlands. This does not make sense. This is a vengeful, hateful, corrupt country that all they're looking at is money and power. But anyway,
yes.
Who was on the call with us?
Hello, it's me.
It's Low.
How are you?
Nice.
How are you, Low?
I'm good. How are you this morning?
We're doing really well. Really well. Welcome aboard.
That's good. Thank you. Thank you.
So I'm going to let you and Tom take over from here.
What's up, Low? How you doing today?
I'm blessed. I'm blessed. How you doing, brother?
I'm very blessed as well. You know, we're just opening up the doors to... We're just talking about right now, this conversation kind of led us to talking about, you know, instead of when you're in the court system and you have to go to prison or they say no prison time, we're just talking about there's got to be something in between that. You know, like going to prison and not going to prison, and that's the only alternatives, basically, that's a pretty big difference. That's a pretty big difference of, you know, living, you know, in the world or being thrown in a cage. So we were just talking about, me and Leona were talking about, like, something needs to be implemented in between. Like, you know, a system for the younger kids that, you know, like a first-degree reckless endangerment where they're going to do 10 years, they're going to do, you know, 8 to 12 years, whatever the case may be, where, you know, this is their only time they've ever been in trouble. They're 17 years old. They have resources. They have hope, I guess. There's got to be something in between, to have mentors involved, to have schooling involved, to have therapists involved, to have a team involved, to have organizations involved, to have resources involved, jobs, skills, where I believe if there was something like that involved, it would change the recidivism rate. Instead of somebody going to prison for a couple of years, somebody going away for a couple of years but coming out with, you know, just a bunch of skill traits that they learn that they can put on their resume. They know how to do a resume 100%. They're mentally focused, you know what I mean? They still didn't get to, at 17, 18 years old, they still didn't get to go home and just go party and go to the bars and go to these house parties and get messed up and have no direction. But I don't know. I just wanted to hear your opinion on maybe like an alternative to some people instead of just straight prison.
Well, my short answer is that I think the bottom line is a lot of people really could care less.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people in society really don't care about that. A lot of people in society feel as if a person breaks the law, they deserve to be punished. I mean, you know, there's a lot of people who have blinders on. There's a lot of people who are biased. And there's a lot of people who just, you know, think that they're so perfect that, you know, that anybody that breaks the law deserves to be punished. Again, you know, people from all walks of life, I'm sure many people drink socially, whether it's, you know, ladies that get together and drink wine socially or people that go to the bar and drink. And I'm sure many times in those situations, they get into the vehicle and drive home. That's breaking the law. But, you know, if you don't get caught, then you got away with breaking the law. But if you do get caught, I mean, you deserve some type of punishment, even though you knew that you were driving under the influence and you could have put other lives in jeopardy or danger. So I think people just really don't think about certain things until it hits home. And I think another thing is, even people that do care or people that would like to get involved in some type of other alternatives to prison, like you just spoke on, I think the bottom line is a lot of people will say that there's just no funding for it.
Yeah,
so
I think that's the two main things.
I think that's the two short answers is a lot of people don't care, and then the other answer would be there's no funding for these type of programs.
And I want to hit on the people that don't care. Like, it's kind of crazy because I guess I can consider myself one of them people that really didn't care before I was in trouble, you know, before you're talking about, like, what happened to you. I've said many times, like, before I got arrested, I remember turning on the news sometimes. I don't know if it was growing up in the household I grew up in, like either the white household or not, but when I turned on the news and I seen like a 17-year-old kid getting a shootout, and like just they would say, you know, in Milwaukee, they would, oh, there's an argument, you know, across the street, and they just, you know, shot at each other one or two times or in the air, and then, you know, they ran. And then they would always say that this 17-year-old kid or 18-year-old kid, like, oh, they just got out of Wales, or they just got out of Lincoln Hills, or they just got out of, like, a juvenile facility. And my first thought before I went to prison was, I couldn't grasp it, no matter what, until I experienced it. Like, I couldn't think, like, how could you get out of prison and within a few weeks and end up picking up a gun to shoot somebody? Like, I just really, at the time, I was like, man, I don't think that they learned their lesson. I don't think that they're ready in life. I think you need to lock them up to learn their lesson until it happens to you and you're locked up and you see things in a different light and you see things in a different perspective. So, you know, I can definitely attest to that most people don't care. Yeah, me and Leona were just talking about that before, too, like, you know, they, you know, about the death penalty and an eye for an eye. And most people want that. Most people want an eye for an eye. You know, when they have a victim involved or when something bad happens to somebody that they know, the first thing they want is revenge. They want you to suffer even more. So I agree on that. But, like, the funding, I mean, I know they would say there's no funding, but I believe it's different. I believe there is a lot of funding for it. And I believe that it's going to take one group to open up the door for other people. I think it just is. It's going to take some people that have experienced prison, that haven't experienced going through this program that, you know, we want to create or we want to see in the system. It changes people's lives that if somebody from prison makes it. And I'm not saying nobody from prison has ever made it. There's authors out there. There's actors. There's a few people that made it, but there's nobody that's definite that's kicked down a bunch of doors where, you know, you're in prison, you're experiencing some things. There's just nobody you wake up to right now. And it's like, you know what, because of that person, we have all of this. We have all this. We have these programs. We have this where, you know, we're treated better. We have these resources now where you can see like a complete night and day change where, like, say you woke up tomorrow in prison and there are people that woke up tomorrow in prison and they were talking about like, wow, like we have hope. Like, man, look at all these changes. Like, there's no more, like, damn, you know, you ain't going to make it. That feeling, you know, for the first time in people's lives in prison, I want there to be a day where people go to prison or an alternative, and they look and they're like, well, there's still hope. There's still a lot of things that we can accomplish, that we can do, where we just basically need to get out. Now, not
can
just, like, get
in?
Out. Yes.
Can I jump in for a second? You know what would be a good idea is to have a Zoom meeting and let people on Facebook know of this Zoom meeting you're going to have to talk about exactly what you're talking about now. And then reach out to Judge Joe, who was in prison at one time, to reach out to Judge Mathis, who was in jail or prison at one time, to reach out to Van Jones, to reach out to Brian Stevenson, to reach out to John Legend, to even what's her name? She was the Loretta Lynch. These are people that are advocating for prisoners, but the judges, they were there. They were exactly there before. But back then, they didn't have the harshest of harsh prison sentences as they do today. Back then, that people were not sentenced to life that easily. So as time goes on, the hatred, the vengeance, the racism, everything gets worse and worse and worse. But, Tom, if you were to start a Zoom meeting, invite people on from Facebook, I guarantee that you're going to have so many supporters and people on that Zoom meeting to talk about exactly what you and Lo are talking about now, to finally make a change and do something. A Zoom meeting would be perfect, and people all over the country and all over the world would be able to participate in it. And sometimes it takes numbers, all the time, it takes numbers for success. Right now, I'm encouraging everybody. I sent a letter around to get signatures from everybody to bring back voting rights for prisoners in this country, because anybody, any citizen of the United States of America should not lose their rights as a citizen to vote when they go to prison. They shouldn't lose it, because when they get sentenced in court, there's no mention of them no longer being a citizen of the United States. There's no mention of them no longer being able to vote. That comes after they're incarcerated. All of a sudden, they don't have that right, being born and raised in this country. This is the mentality of a dysfunctional government, and people need to take back their role as the government. I just wanted to say that.
And I agree with you as far as finding. I think the best way to find like-minded people is to use social media. I think that's where you can get a large group or following of people that are like-minded who share the same ideals as we all share. You know, social media should definitely should and can be used as a networking platform, you know?
Yeah, speaking on the voting rights, it's hard to sell somebody, that you know, like you're treated equal, but you can't even vote. Like right now, I can't vote. I had my at 18 years old, I had my voting rights taken away until I'm like 33 or something. Like that's one of the first things that, you know, they told me. We're like, oh, you can't vote until you're 33. And if you vote, even now, if I go vote, technically, if they really wanted to with my probation time, they could easily give me 10 years. 10 years
it's
in prison,
right.
Which is more than double than doing armed
robberies.
Not
right. Do you know Vermont and Maine have never taken away the voting rights of a prisoner? They have never taken away Maine and Vermont are the two states in this country that still allow prisoners of this country to vote. And what I put together was voting rights for all American citizens. We, the undersigned, pledge our support in favor of such a bill to restore the rights of American incarcerated citizens to vote. We further pledge to support any political campaign or leadership in favor of introducing a bill which would allow U.S. citizens, including the incarcerated American citizens, to vote. Maine and Vermont have no restrictions on the voting rights of incarcerated American citizens, and therefore, we also, as citizens of the United States, believe restrictions should be lifted for all incarcerated individuals born in the United States of America. Americans do not lose their citizenship when convicted of a crime. When found guilty of any offense in a court of law, an American citizen is given a sentence of punishment which exceeds the humane and realistic punishment of prisoners in almost every other country in the world. Moreover, the harshest of punishment given to an incarcerated American citizen has never stated during the sentencing of the offenders they were no longer citizens of the United States and were no longer allowed to vote. Therefore, we, the undersigned, request that legislative members in favor of the restoration of prisoners' voting rights introduce a bill that reflects all U.S. citizens, including the country's incarcerated citizens, be allowed to exercise their right and civic duty to vote. This is what needs to happen. This is what needs to happen.
Yeah, I think it's ridiculous that somebody can come out of prison and not still have their voting rights. You know what I mean? It's just I don't understand the aspect. Why can't people that come out of prison on probation not vote? Like, what are they so not qualified to vote for any?
They're afraid.
Why are they so not qualified?
They're afraid the prisoners are going to vote for the candidate that's going to be in support of reforming prisons and abolishing life without parole and life sentences and harsh sentences. That's what they're afraid of. But there are politicians out there that are fighting to abolish the life and life without parole and abolish a lot of these other ridiculous things that are going on in the prisons. And if prisoners have their right to vote, they're going to be voting for those people that are going to be for the cause. That's why we need to get prisoners' votes back on right now. We need to get it back.
Tom, correct me if I'm wrong, but whenever they do like a census for like certain states or counties, don't they count prisoners in that census count?
You said,
I don't know.
Do they count them in which aspect?
No, I said when they do, you know, a census count as far as like, you know, populations of certain states or even counties, Don't they count prisoners in those census counts?
I don't even know.
I can't 100% attest to that. I wouldn't even know. No. That's a great question. I would have to Google that, but I'm going
to
find the answer
out. I just found out yesterday, too. They're giving out another. They're going to be giving out another stimulus, right, in the next couple of months? And they said prisoners this time will not be getting the stimulus like they did last time. Do you know that a lot of prisoners did not get that stimulus to begin with? So if they were eligible, they said they won't be eligible as they were last time. So if they were eligible last time, that means they should have gotten a stimulus. And if they didn't, they should be getting it now. They should be putting in for it.
Yeah, because I'm sure a lot of inmates were not aware that they even qualify for stimulus money. And again, that's because they don't want to put that out there. They don't want you to know.
Well, if there's
hey,
a form,
to
and
answer
there's,
your
I,
question.
Yeah.
To answer your question, though, I just Googled some things, and they do count.
I knew they did. I thought they did. But with that being said, though, if they count us when they do a census count as far as populations in certain counties and whatnot, then why shouldn't we be able to vote? If you're good enough, if we're considered, citizens in a certain county when it comes to doing a census count, then yes, I agree. We should have every equal right to vote. Our vote should matter.
I just don't understand what are the stipulations of why they say even my own PO couldn't tell me that. Because in California, you can vote. And in other cities, you can vote when you're on probation. You just can't be incarcerated and vote. And that's, I think that should matter. Voting while you're in prison, I think it's a topic to talk about. If given enough resources, I can kind of see why maybe they don't want them voting, because they just don't know, and there would just be so many thousands and thousands of people voting that really don't know, because they don't give you the right resources and maximum and stuff. But I guess like now newspapers providing in certain information they could, but like especially when you get out, like I really did not understand that why I couldn't vote. They couldn't give me a direct reasoning, like a full on. Oh, this is exactly why. It's a norm. Oh, you have to wait until you're offered probation, or you have to wait until you're. So in some states, you actually have to wait until you're offered probation, and then you have to wait a time after that of just being free. You just need to be a couple years free, and then you can vote. So I just never understood that, and I understand it's something big, but voting is something that's always been talked about for the people that have been disenfranchised. Like, voting, the only voting rights, we've never had to talk about white people voting. Like, we've never had to have that conversation. Like, hey, I think rich white people should vote. Like, we've never had to have that conversation. It was, voting for, women, and it was voting for, we've had to vote for people of color. Then we had to talk about voting for people in certain neighborhoods that were low income. Like, it's always the people that are going through the struggles that have it a little bit difficult that are the topics about voting. And I just think like 2020, women's rights got their votes to a certain extent. Now we're seeing LeBron James leading a thing, helping black people and the black, population get their votes. They put so many stipulations on if you're just black and voting. Like, you got to think the Constitution, that's what the whole country is running off. The Constitution was made before black people had rights. So, and they haven't revamped the Constitution. So it's like, how can the Constitution be wrote when, black people were slavered, and that's it. And then now all of a sudden slavery's over, but the Constitution's still the same. I think it definitely helps out one population a lot more than another. I mean, to say the least of it, and that's including, voting rights, as far as even Hispanics that come up here that live here, that are paying rent, that are trying to get their citizenship, that are trying to do things like, if they're in the process of getting their citizenship, I know some people that, even when they get their citizenship, they still tell them you can't vote. That's not a topic that I hear many conversations about, that citizens that come up from the United States, baby boomers or whatever, that weren't born here but that came up here when they were kids, they didn't even know, and then all of a sudden they get their citizenship, right? And then they're told, oh, but you can't vote. We're taking away one of your most important rights you have as so-called being an American. We're going to just tell you that you're an American, but you can't do that. That's not an American. That's basically I'm less of a human being than somebody that's able to vote. I have no say at all. I have no say in any of these laws and any of these things that I want to stand up and speak my opinion. My opinion does not matter, but I'm supposed to say that I'm treated equally. I'm supposed to be grateful. So
yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
but
I hear you on that.
There's a lot of changes that need made. A lot of changes.
I just think to open up the door, like I said, maybe my perspective is wrong the whole time, but I don't think it is. But the reason why, you know, like I do a radio show and I'm a big advocate for, you know, the prison population for sure, to say the least. But my whole time since I've been out is I've met people like Leona. Not a lot of them. Not for sure, she's a different breed, but I've met people, good people, since I've been in LA, even in Wisconsin, that like I could tell like they wanted to change the system. They just know like it's not right. But my mentality's been different a little bit about like I just feel like I need to be somebody to make it. And maybe I'm wrong in this aspect. Maybe I don't think I've accomplished as much as I really have. But I've always thought, like, man, to really kick down doors, to really make these people, and I'm talking about these people, the politics, the people in the leadership role that make policies, that make laws, that can have their voices heard as far as the things we want, I just feel like in order for them to listen, it's going to take somebody to knock down that door. It's going to take somebody that went to prison, that served years in prison, and then one day be able to walk in a room with all these people of power and be able to have their voice heard because they have value. They've made it. They've made millions of dollars, or they've done it differently. They've gotten degrees. They've opened up doors where they at least have a resume to show, like, wow, like he or she went to prison. They shouldn't be here. Like, we all know they shouldn't be sitting in the room next to us, making as much money as us, living in the communities as us. Like, these people deep down want to help out prisoners, but they don't want them treated equally. If you think, like, a CEO of the company, you know, wants his six neighbors, like, oh, yeah, they just all, you know, they all have prison records. They went to prison 10 years. They feel some type of way where it's like they should never be able to accomplish what I've accomplished. Like, you know, if you serve 10 years in prison and somebody that doesn't serve 10 years in prison, but you're making more money than them, you have more resources than them, you're living in a better community than them, they really don't think you deserve that. They don't think it's possible because it doesn't happen. But it's going to take one, like, there's a LeBron James, there's a Michael Jordan in everything. There's always one of the best, one of the greats to come through and to pave the path. The Muhammad Ali in boxing, in every sport, there's always been this one figure to open up doors in race, doors in politics, and how athletes are viewed, in rappers. There's always one to really start kicking down the doors and to start opening up a level of where other people can achieve what this person has achieved from this background. And I just feel like we need one of these figures. We have Meek Mill, and we have, you know, Danny Trejo, and we have a couple people that are doing wonderful things, that have written books and doing things, that are opening up their own businesses. But we need this one universal figure where, like, the whole world knows who this person is, where it's like, damn, they went to prison, but they came out and their sole mission was to change the prison system, was to really see changes where people across America go to prison and they realize right away, wow, we have this, we have these opportunities, this is how the prison system is run now, and it's based off of this person, this man or woman or of this team that came out and said, no, this is enough. This is 2020. This is enough. We need to vote. We need to not have black men just thrown in cages. We need to have these opportunities once we are sentenced to prison. We need to have these doors open up once we're out of prison. And this is what needs to happen, because prison is so many years behind the eight ball. It's hard to succeed. It really is. So I just think it's going to take this one defining person, not just one single human being, but when I mention this one person, it takes a team effort. But I just think it's going to take this one person with this whole team, but they need to accomplish something. They need to walk in a room and know, separate themselves differently. And I think once people see more people like that, like, wow, people from prison really are getting degrees. They really are getting bachelor's degrees. They really are making $200,000 living in these good communities. They're finally talking around people, or they're finally at these meetings where they've never been at. They've never been at. They, you know, like all these millionaire meetings and all these business meetings and all these things, how to spend money in the communities and how all these meetings of the power of where people live. People from prison are not in these meetings. They're not. They're not sitting at the table. Nobody from prison is sitting at the table with that background. Like, I'm here. I have a voice in my community that matters, but I also have a prison record. Those people, unfortunately, don't really exist now. Once we start having more people in those rooms where it's more common, where it's like, wow, he is from prison, and he does represent a large population in our community, and he does is speaking up and advocating about this will work. When nobody else can talk about it, when nobody else can talk about that background, I think then some people of power are finally going to open up and be willing to have that conversation, just like how there are white people now having conversation, or people from background are finally listening to, you know, Black Lives Matter. You know, in the beginning, I still remember when Black Lives Matter. I'm going to be honest. I still remember social media, white people saying, like, oh, all lives matter. You know, white people lives matter too, brown people lives matter too, not just black lives. But that's not the point. The point isn't Black Lives Matter doesn't mean only black lives matter. That's not the point. They're just bringing awareness, like there's certain stipulations of being the skin color, of going through certain things in the world where it matters. We're just bringing awareness to that. And I think now, for the first time, white people and other cultures are finally like, you know what, I do need to listen. I do need to listen. I can't speak what it's like being a black man pulled over. I can't speak what it's like living in this community and doing this. So for the first time, I think people are like, you know what? I just need to listen. Let me understand where I think we need that to happen, how it's happening in the world. We need that to happen with the powers of these communities. And once we start having people from prison or people from this background that want to talk and help people from this population, once we start having them in these rooms, then I think some doors are going to be open.
No, I would really.
But it's not voting rights. I think we need to get our voting rights. It's shameful we don't have voting rights. And I think once they make it, it's going to happen. You know, Loke, you're only you know, 40 years old. It's going to be within your lifetime, for sure. There's going to be a big breaking news on CNN or on some news channel that, you know, now, you know, when you get out of prison, you can 100% vote. Like, it's going to happen in the world. I mean, I know it's going to happen in my lifetime. It's just, it hasn't happened. And if I can be one of the people to push that to happen a little bit sooner, maybe, then I want to. I want to be somebody where it's like, I'm tired of saying I'm treated equally by people everywhere I go. Oh, this is what I want to do. And most people are like, oh, you can do that. Well, it's easy to say you can do that, but I can't vote. It always makes me feel, you know, like I'm an inferior human being. Wherever I go, I can't vote. I can't have a conversation about politics. I can't even have my voice heard about, hey, I think this person is the right person, because everything I say, my voice matters at all, because I can't do anything about it. I can't go to these rallies. I can't go to these meetings. I can't have a voice in making changes in the law that affect mainly people from my background. The only people that can affect these changes are people that's never experienced or grew up from my background. I think that's kind of backwards.
It doesn't make sense.
No, it amazed. I was so amazed when Kim Kardashian got the woman released from prison. I was amazed because I'm like, wow, here it is. Yeah, she's a celebrity, a very well-known celebrity throughout the world. And yet she fought for a cause, and the people respected it, and the president, I mean, everyone was on board. Everybody went along with it. So You know, Tom, that just goes to the point of what you said as far as celebrities, their the power that they have, their leverage that they have, you know, simply just based by the just based on who they are, basically, gets you a great deal of respect, you know, just like and recently the WNBA player, she got the other guy released from prison, not to, you know, just recently.
Yep.
I mean, these people, they respect it, you know.
Actually,
there's
Janet
no
Lee.
There.
Janet Lee from the ones that are putting on the national are actually going to be reaching out to her to see if she will be involved as well.
Because of who these people are, you know. In my mind, I'm thinking like, well, man, if I had a celebrity co-sign or somebody with, you know, with their type of celebrity star power, you know, could that work out for me? You know, what makes them choose these individuals that they want to help get released from prison, you know?
Money.
What made Kim Kardashian look into this woman's background or choose this woman and say, you know what, I am going to put everything on the line to try to get this woman out of prison, you know?
Yeah,
it's a beautiful thing. I would love to see more of it. You know, I just think I think a lot of society is naive to a lot of individuals that are actually incarcerated. So, again, they just a lot of public perception. They just feel like so many people are in prison for a reason. But
mm-hmm.
they don't know that everybody, each individual case or circumstance is different. You know?
Exactly.
That's what I tried to say. When I went to prison and when I came out, it was like I wasn't saying I'm ungrateful or anything. I shouldn't be, because at the end of the day, when you do an armed robbery, you can't just 100% say, hey, you don't deserve to go to prison. You know what I mean? There's different factors. I never really argued the fact, like, okay, I can understand if society and people hate me or whatever. Like, I don't really understand that, but I can see their point of view where they're like, you know, this kid needs to go to prison. My point of view always to them was prison is not a few-year sentence. It's a lifetime. And that's the thing people don't understand. When you hear these sentences where they're young, and they're getting 2-3 years. Do not think it's 2-3 years. It is anybody who is a mother, a father, a guardian of somebody where they're watching them and they love them and they support them and they go to prison. It is even if you're the son or daughter and your family, you know, your parent goes to prison and they come out, it is a lifetime sentence. It's not one day they just go to prison and they forget about it forever. And it is a lifetime sentence. And that's all I'm trying to preach to people. It shouldn't be that. If prison was designed different and we didn't want to have an alternative and they designed prison different, yes, it might be beneficial for people that have life in prison because it's easier. And some people, you know, Leona might disagree or people might disagree, but I've met people where I just don't think I have met a few individuals where I just don't think, like, you know, they can ever be released in society. I just don't think that they're there. I just everything about them, maybe, you know, with more training, and that's what I mean about prison being different, they could be back in society. But I've met individuals where I'm like, I probably would never let my family, or I probably would never even let my dog around this person. But I've met so many other individuals where it's like, people don't realize it's a death sentence. Like me, I'm not saying look at everything I've accomplished. I'm not saying, oh, I've accomplished so much. But everything I've accomplished, everything I've had to go, I've had to fight extra for. I've had to work harder for. And I just never realized that, like, prison will revolve around my life for the rest of my life. I'm 27 years old, about to be 28 years old. And I did an armed robbery with a fake gun, just lost my mind, you know, I was sad, and I just everything about my story, I just needed basically another chance, and I'm still talking about it every day. Every day I still talk about me going to prison, me going through that experience. And this happened when I was 18 years old. And it's like 10 years, you know, from 18 to 20, 28, basically, it's going to be. I turned 28 in a couple months, 10 years. Anybody that's ever lived from 18 to 28 that's older than 28 years old right now in the world, I mean, imagine that. Imagine the rest of my life from you know, everybody makes poor choices at 18. What if somebody got in a fight at 18 and, you know, they just got up and walked away? What if that one fight, you had to talk about that one fight almost every day for the rest of your life? It's different. It's not just a couple years. It's not just a punishment.
You know, being incarcerated is bad enough, but the thing that bothers me with incarceration is I think a prisoner can come out someday years later and be normal if the treatment while they were inside was normal, if it was humane. You know, if they were just, in Norway and all those other places, they don't have these cement walls and bars and everything. They have, it's like housing, like a regular housing development, and it's not so animalistic. But I think if prisoners came out of a place like that, you know, something that's more humane, I think all of you could have adjusted better. And I also want to say in Exodus 23, it just says, Exodus 23:1-3, it says, "You shall not circulate a false report. Do not put your hand with the wicked to be an unrighteous witness. You shall not follow a crowd to do evil, nor shall you testify in a dispute so as to turn aside after many to pervert justice. You shall not show partiality to a poor man in his dispute." And this is what happens with a lot of prisoners. The crowd comes together. People in society come together to bring about vengeance and hatred and to get the sentencing. There's no compassion or understanding in that situation. And this is what needs to happen. People need to soften their hearts a little bit, try to look at the individuals, and not just be for the harshest and most inhumane sentencing of prisoners. It shouldn't happen.
Yeah, like I said, a lot of people don't realize until it hits home, until one of their loved ones are incarcerated, you know.
That's it.
And
then some of them, a lot of them, like Tom was talking about, there's a lot of prominent people out there who, for some reason or other, some way or another, they will cover up their loved ones' crime. They have those kind of connections. It happened right here in Massachusetts. You know, power does a lot when it happens in their home, in their situation. It's a different story. There's people here who have covered up their own son, and they are in high power in Massachusetts. They covered up their own son's crime. He never paid served any time in prison. Yet the same powerful leader has not made any kind of effort to release a prisoner. Not one. During this whole pandemic, they're talking about releasing the nonviolent. They haven't even released the nonviolent prisoners.
I agree.
No, I know after this, Tom is going to get in contact with Kim Kardashian and have her advocate to get me out.
Yes, I am. Honestly, I reached out to Kim Kardashian's two shows ago, so 2 weeks to this date. I just kind of Googled her organization and the good things that she's doing, and then I somehow got somebody's email on there, and I just sent them an email. I haven't heard anything back, but I'm going to continue sending them emails.
It's going to take a long time because as popular as she is, her mail is probably going to take years.
Yeah, it's flooded. But I'm just hoping that, being that very soon, I'm going to say, I know we have to go in a minute and a half, but I'm hoping that very soon I really can take the step in my life to start separating myself from people from prison. And meaning when I walk in a room, I can, my voice has value. I want to show people that I did go to prison. I did go to prison for a long time, a lot less than most people, but I still made it in life. And I think I'm only a year or two away from really walking in a room and saying that there's nobody else in this room like me that's been in the prison, at least compare me to that. And then hopefully people can, you know, my voice can carry a little bit more weight and we can open up some more doors. But
okay, you
like
will
I said,
be hearing from Alexandra. She will be contacting you, the media, director of media affairs. And also, I'd like to have you reach out to Janet Lee and Erin Nichols, the two that are coordinating the National Day of Freedom and Justice. And I will give them your information as well so you can connect with them. Because, Tom, I think that you getting connected with these people, I think you're going to be good with them. I think you'll work well together.
I'm very excited. I want Loke to give out your information for the Free Loke campaign. You know, I'm still working
on
that. Oh, he left, but okay. Then I just want to give out my information because I know we're ending right now. I'm very reachable on Instagram. Under my name is PITT1.345. And then I also have an email. It is t.dormer, my last name, dormer89@yahoo.com. So you can reach me in both ways. And Leona, me and you are going to be in touch. And I'm going to talk next Thursday, like I always do. But, you know, I would love to, you know, send me an email and us talk outside the radio show about those, contacting those people.
Great. Thank you so much for being on again, Tom. And as I said, we'll be getting you connected with some of these people that are getting ready to do some major work.
All right, I appreciate it, and see you very soon.
We'll see you next. We'll hear you next Thursday, and thank you so much for being on with us. And we are now going to be signing off, everyone. I hope you enjoyed the show. And Tom, again, thank you so much for being on.
All right, have a wonderful day. Bye.
You too.